Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Welcome, listeners, to another exciting episode of Zed Games, the most beloved gaming radio program in this country and the most beloved of all time as well.
Yeah.
Tom, wouldn't you agree?
In anywhere in the universe.
Yes, yes, exactly. We are coming to you live from the 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane. You might be listening to us around the nation on the Community Radio Network. This episode, Razor, what are we doing in the world of gaming news, reviews, and how do you do's?
Lee, you've been playing Abzu.
I have.
A game about sleeping with the fishes.
In a way, yes, but not the way that you're thinking.
We also have a couple of special guests joining us before that. Mm-hmm. Firstly, Joel from SAE Quantum College.
He's a student there.
He's a student. He's at the ripe old age of 22 years young, and he's just won an in-house competition to see who could market the game the best.
Right.
And, you know, he's won the lottery because he's on this show.
So we were the prize.
Yes.
Huh. Heyo.
And also his mentor lecturer, Anthony Wood, will be joining us later on as well.
Wonderful. We should also introduce ourselves. Tom, I mentioned you briefly, but you're here.
I am.
Yes.
Just sitting in the corner like a piece of mold, really.
Yep. So if you hear that voice, listener, don't be alarmed. It's Tom.
That's, yeah. I'm just shifting positions,
yep.
As mold sometimes does. Maybe when you get it on your shoe.
Right. Razor, what are we doing now?
The week in gaming news headlines, of course. Pokemon Go has been dominating the headlines recently. But this time, a couple from Detroit, USA, have filed a class action lawsuit against the makers of the game, saying that the popular mobile game is interfering with their quality of life. Scott and Jamie Dodich claim that the proximity to a nearby park, which has been designated a Pokemon gym, receives hundreds of visitors every day, interfering with their daily lives. The pair say that players of the game are generally disrespectful of private property, with their lawns and landscaping taking a beating, as well as ongoing privacy concerns. Niantic, the game's developer, as well as Nintendo and the Pokemon Company, were named as defendants in the suit, which demands that Niantic cease placing Pokemon on private property. Additionally, the lawsuit asks that a share of the game's revenue be given to private property owners who have been affected by the game's popularity.
This is an interesting one because I don't actually know anyone who is, at this point, still playing Pokemon Go. It seems like they killed that really quickly themselves. Niantic put a stop to people
playing their game.
Yeah, stomping all over gardens and disrupting people's lives by playing the game, by making it so that no one would want to play the game.
Mm.
So I'm curious to see how this one plays out in the courts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, like the craziest thing about this news story is that people still live in Detroit.
Yeah, well.
I didn't realize that.
Moving on. Tom?
CSGO Lounge, one of the largest websites for gambling Counter-Strike skins, has announced an end to betting. The move comes in the wake of a public outcry against the practice following a class action lawsuit that alleges that the industry facilitates underage gambling, in which CSGO Lounge was named. The game's developer Valve has been sending cease and desist letters to numerous websites involved in skin betting.
So what is CSGO Lounge going to get into now? Are they going to become an actual lounge, do you think?
they're going to become a derelict sofa.
Yeah.
Coming to a city near you.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Right. The PC launch of the eagerly awaited space exploration game No Man's Sky has been sullied by technical issues. According to Steam user reviews and Razer, many players are unable to progress past the company logo, and those who can actually play the game are reporting crashes to desktop, stuttering, and severe issues with frame rate. Additionally, several game-breaking bugs have been found. Hello Games said that an emergency patch was incoming, with the team working overtime to get it out as quickly as possible. Ray, you've been playing No Man's Sky on the PC. How's that working out for you?
It works.
Right.
It runs. Now, I have noticed a lot of the issues that were mentioned in that story, stuttering being the primary one, and frame rate drops, and pop-in, which is kind of not a technical problem, but it's still a bit annoying. So I know that a lot of people can't actually play the game especially people are using like, I think it's like
AMD processors. Yes, ones.
They're just like, hey, we don't, you can't play using that processor, by the way. FYI, sorry about the $60 or whatever. So yeah, it has been a bit annoying for me, but at least I can play the game.
Right. So now, they haven't taken the Sky from you then?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah. However, I bought the game on GOG.com.
Yeah.
And I found out that maybe that was the wrong decision, even though it saved me $30, because the Steam users of the game, people who bought using Steam, are getting an emergency patch rolled out. They've actually already received it, whereas GOG users haven't received the patch. So, but, you know, that's not cool.
But you did save $30.
I did.
So, you know, there's that.
So my thoughts on the game itself, that'll have to wait until next week when we review it.
Fantastic.
One of the highest freefall jumps in film history has been performed on the set of the upcoming Assassin's Creed movie. Michael Fassbender's stunt double Damian Walters decided to actually perform a 38-meter leap of faith for the sake of realism, the highest attempted in 35 years. The stuntman safely landed on a 10-by-10-meter inflatable pad. Video of the stunt has been posted to Assassin's Creed movie's Twitter page. The film is set for release in December.
Interesting thing is, as soon as he landed in that pad, no one could find him. No one knew where he went.
It was like he had disappeared off the face of the planet.
Yeah, and like three or four guards like all ran up to the edge, and they're all looking around. No one could find him.
Where'd he go?
Yeah, where was he? Yeah. And then a notable politician just mysteriously died of neck hole several minutes later.
Neck hole.
Yeah.
That's the official medical term.
Yes. Yeah. When you get a sudden hole in your neck.
Right.
Yeah.
It happens.
It does.
That seems needlessly dangerous to me. I mean, in this day and age, it's really easy just to CGI that stuff in.
Yep.
I mean, no one's going to notice the difference anyway.
Fans will appreciate the fact that this man plummeted 38 meters into an inflatable sack.
Yeah. Well, I hope they got the good shot.
Yeah. Yeah, what if a bird flew through? We can't have that shot.
Yeah.
Up you go.
In the studio now, we are joined by Joel Mahonishin and Anthony Wood. Ooh. Now, Joel, you're a student at SAE.
That's correct.
Studying game making?
Game development with a major in games design.
Yep. And the guys there...
that's what he said.
Yeah.
Basically. And you guys had an internal competition to see who could market their student-made game the best.
Yeah, that's right. So we had six teams of students, and basically we said on Friday the 13th, I think it was, whoever was number one on SlideDB would win a radio interview. And yeah, I ended up putting quite a bit of effort in and got across the line there.
Excellent. And
congratulations
thank you.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
And the game that you guys made was Bloop Bloop.
Bloop Boop.
Bloop Boop, sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
Oh, my God, Ray.
Mate, amateur hour.
We're supposed to be a prize here, Ray. Come on.
Tell us about Bloop Boop.
So it's a 2D physics-based game. It's kind of like Doodle Jump in a way, where you're constantly going up through a pre-made level. And basically, the player swipes, and that creates a platform, and they boop to the end of the level.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And where did you come up with that idea? Was that inspired by Doodle Jump mainly?
Well, basically, at the start of this try, we were set with a project brief that said that we had to research some successful games in the marketplace, and from that, we would create a kind of framework that we would create our game from. So yeah, I researched Doodle Jump, Temple Run, and Super Stickman Golf.
So the game's actually already been published on the Google Play Store.
That's right.
It's amazing these days that a student-made game can be executed and published in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, well, we have six people working on the project. So, you know, we got me, I'm the creative lead and project manager. I've got two programmers, Dan Koitka and Luke Wilmot, and two graphic designers and two animators. So, you know, it just comes down to good project management and making sure that you kind of break the task down well enough to get it done in that amount of time.
So part of the challenge, one of the biggest challenges of game development, is getting the game into the eyes of the public.
Yep.
Marketing the game, getting it seen. You guys did the best job out of your little crew. Mm. What was the secret to your success?
Well, I was in charge of the marketing of the project, and basically I just shameless self-promotion was my goal. I posted anywhere and everywhere I could, on Facebook, Twitter, on Reddit. And yeah, we ended up actually getting 5,000 views on our gameplay video, which was pretty nice.
Yeah, I can think of at least like 4 people in this room who could learn from your efforts, George.
I'd be thought of a role model.
One thing I've noticed, I've seen a bunch of the student projects that SAE put out. They're always of very high quality. But what I really enjoy about your game is that you've scoped it really well, you know. A lot of them are quite ambitious, but in the end, you know, you've kind of got a limited amount of stuff that you can do. Whereas this is, you know, start to finish, this is a well-realized game. What's your secret? What's the difference there?
Well, I've learned from past experience, really. I've overscaped games in the past in other projects. And, yeah, basically I just wanted gameplay-driven game that was simple enough to play and easy to play, hard to master. Mm. So yeah, that was the goal.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to master. Tom could not finish the first level.
Yeah, it takes some time.
And we should shame him on the air right now. Boo!
I thought the little gold spinny things were like good to get until I splattered on them pretty early on. But you know, that's a mistake you only make once. Mm.
Well, most people. You kept going back for more.
Maybe if I hit them 5 times in a row. Mm.
He wanted to keep playing. That's the main thing.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. Have you had a look at the sales analytics for your game?
I have, yeah. I've been watching that fairly closely.
I imagine you would, actually, yes. How's it working out?
So we're up to about 260 downloads, I believe.
Hey.
And, yeah, we got our first purchase just the other week. $1.40 for between the 6 of us. So.
Nice. Yeah.
Already made a profit.
So that's going towards your student loans then.
Yeah, well, I spent it this afternoon.
Oh.
Right. I mean, how do you divide that kind of money?
6 ways.
Right, okay. But, I mean, do you guys have payment plans in place so that after a month
we kind of made the assumption that these being student projects that we wouldn't be overly successful.
Yeah.
We were prepared for like those few small purchases, and we basically said that they would go to the end of year party.
Yeah,
you know, go towards the case of beer.
Yeah,
but yeah, if we made any more than that, then at that point we would have to start getting that plan together.
I'm really hoping that this is something that, you know, like PewDiePie or Total Biscuit, someone like just casually notices your game across, on Reddit, yeah, and it's like, oh, I'll just do a video about this, and it just goes completely gangbusters.
That's the
end. At the end of the year, you guys have the best party ever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically where this anecdote goes.
So how has this project succeeding made you guys feel about independent game development, like banding together and forming your own small studio? Are you confident in doing that now, or do you think you'd rather just hitch a ride on some big studio?
It's always been something in the back of our mind. Like, obviously, you know, being straight out of uni, it's good to have that portfolio behind you so you can go out and apply for jobs. And I think that's the main thing we've gotten from this project, is a good portfolio piece. And, you know, if that gets us hired, then, yeah, that's a good outcome in the end. But, yeah, we have been talking about starting our own studios and that as well.
Are you sure there aren't any other secrets to marketing that you're withholding from us?
I'm not sure what you're getting at there, but no, I kind of just did my own thing, just posted everywhere and everywhere I could.
Yeah. What about like crazy titles, like with your post on Reddit? Did you just say this game is about doodling and jumping, or was it something more provocative or with innuendos to get the clicks, you know?
I mean, apart from the title, Bloop Boop, obviously, that bit of alliteration there, not really. Just kind of tried to break the game down, that short sentence. So, yeah, didn't really have any trick to it.
Yep.
Man, it's so easy. You'd think that we'd be doing much better.
Joel, it's been wonderful talking to you. Congratulations once again for winning the contest.
Thanks.
I hope this radio experience has been enjoyable for you.
Yeah.
So Bloop Boop is available on the Google Play Store
on the Google Play Store. You can just search it up and you'll find it, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter just by searching up Bloop Boop.
Excellent.
Right. And you've successfully passed your interview to become our next managing coordinator.
You are listening to Zed Games. That was Regurgitator with Freshmint. We are joined once again in the studio by Anthony Wood of SAE Quantum and his student Joel Mahonishin. Joel, we just spoke to you about your now award-winning game, Bloop Boop. But Anthony, we thought we'd bring you in just to discuss the actual program that Joel was involved in.
Yeah.
So you are the associate lecturer in game design. Is this?
I think that's what it says at the bottom of my emails. Yeah, there's a couple of us, but yeah, associate lecturer. We don't worry about titles though.
I'm the boss.
So tell us about the way that SAE runs their game design course these days.
The goal is that we're trying to balance this need now to get indie developers and then also, getting people ready for bigger studios, which is a really hard balancing act. And the point of this course, particularly that Joel was just involved in, was figuring out that, you know, the first 90% of game development is hard, but the second 90% is even harder. And that second 90% is marketing and getting people to see it. And that doesn't happen a lot in schools across the world, even. You know, it's something that's still is low on the priority. We're still just sort of figuring out how to model or how to program. But as we sort of move towards a more indie-focused industry, we really need to figure out how to get games out there to start learning those lessons, getting the feedback from the horrible, horrible people on the internet.
They're the worst.
Yeah, right?
Except for our listeners, who are all lovely.
So the idea is, to get that experience as well before you graduate so that you have a whole sort of portfolio of things where you can say, I've released it. I understand how the market works. I know how to shape a product that fits within a market. I know how to target an audience. All the stuff that budding game developers don't necessarily think about when they're getting started.
Mm. There's a lot to unpack there. One thing that I find really interesting is that about a year or two ago, I saw a bunch of game devs talking about the fact that in Australia in particular, we don't have any large studios anymore. So there's no way for students to go from being students to then being able to, you know, go on there, like go through the neophyte trials to become studio ready. And so what I love about SAE is the fact that that's built into the whole way that the students learn.
Yeah, there's not as many junior positions in big companies. We still have a couple in Australia. Mm. There's a couple in Brisbane. You have Kixeye and Gameloft. But there isn't enough positions to take the, couple of hundred graduates that come out of university every year. So most people, whether they have the choice or not, they're going to go into indie development because there just simply aren't the options there. Most people can't move overseas and try and hack it in Montreal straight out of uni. It's the position that I was in 5 years ago. There were no jobs, so you had to start your own thing. So I hope to bring that sort of experience that I've had, out in the real world in the trenches and sort of show the students that it can be pretty tough. But if you stick to it and, you just keep moving forward, just keep persevering, that's when success might come.
And I think I've found that just through my project, just that little bit of experience out in the industry through releasing a game, it really kind of makes you more confident actually when you're out in the thick of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the really great things about the program is that, the skills required to make a game extend beyond just modeling and programming. Part of it is like you have to be an entrepreneur now. You have to be able to know how to form a company, like how to like work with other human beings, all of that stuff.
Yeah, and game design is essentially about communication. So it's really just an extension of that. How do we communicate now to the wider public? So we have to learn different ways to communicate. How does a poster work? Well, we can use the same things that we use in game design to make a poster. It's about identifying a target audience. So it's really just broadening the core skills that they're already learning. And it's very hands-on. We run studios instead of classes where we're always developing. And think of it like a life drawing class or an art studio. Everyone's at their easel, doing their art, and us facilitators sort of walking around, pushing in different directions, asking provocative questions, you know, really trying to shape the product like that. So it's a really hands-on sort of experience rather than, you know, lecture halls with lots and lots and lots of theory that you forget anyway. You know, here you sort of learn the lessons by just jumping in the deep end and learning how to swim, which I think is a heaps better way of learning how to make games.
One thing that I've noticed is that on particularly, it's kind of a joke amongst a bunch of game developers that I've interacted with, is that on a lot of forums that deal with game development, there's a huge amount of hostility to the concept of marketing. Game developers don't seem to want to have to think about that stuff. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, we're suffering artists. You know, you know, marketing's for the people in the suits. And, you know, we just want to create art. We want to tell stories. And we don't have to worry about selling our product. We just, you know, want people to magically be aware of it across the globe, you know. I think that's where the hostility comes. But, you know, we need a reality check, you know, games development more than ever. And, you know, it's not turning around. It's a business, and you've got to think of it like a business. You've got to shape a product to a customer, you know, if you want to be successful commercially. You know, props to the people that are making art games and doing all that sort of stuff. But, you know, art games don't pay the rent for most of the people that do it. You know, if you've got the luxury, that's great. But for most of us, it's about being commercial. It's about getting a product out there. So, yeah, we don't like it, but it's what you've got to do.
Mm. Joel, what do you think that you've learned through this process about how to reach your audience?
Well, it's just kind of about getting into the deep end and just doing it. Really, for me, I just kind of had no experience before with releasing a game, so after I'd read a couple of blogs and I just kind of went out there and just started posting.
Right. Well, it seemed to have worked. You've got at least 200-ish sales, you were saying?
Yeah, 260.
You've made $1.40.
$1.40, yeah.
Yeah. Tom made my phone watch an ad before, so I think you're getting about a fraction of a cent coming your way as well.
We just thought we'd have that in there in case 10,000 people buy it, download it, and then don't buy any IAPs.
No. You own that fraction of a cent, Joel. That's yours now.
All towards that end of year party.
Fantastic.
Are any of the students that come through surprised about their expectations going into the games industry? Like when they get the reality check that they might not be able to get just a cushy game development job in a big studio, like they might actually have to wear more hats than just being a programmer or a designer?
Yeah, I think there's a really big divide between making games and playing games. And I don't think a lot of people understand that until they walk in the door and, you know, you realize that, oh, I don't get to play all the games. I have to actually sit and work on a single element for 2 weeks, or, you know, so it's much more of a job than people think, you know, just because it's games. It doesn't mean that there's a lot of hard work to go in, you know, going in. So yeah, it's a bit of a culture shock for a lot of people. You know, most courses, the attrition rate in the first couple of semesters is pretty high. I'm not sure how many started with Joel's cohort.
Oh, we lost a lot.
But we're down to, you know, combined designers and programmers, there's about 14 left. So, you know, a lot of people drop out. They just don't quite understand. But, you know, we still encourage everyone to, you know, if you're really into it, you've got to come along. You know, everyone's welcome. And we try and make this, you know, a really open, friendly space. You know, everyone really gets along. And there's you know, there's the pressure of if you don't release a game, then, you know, it's going to impact your marks. But the process is pretty casual. You know, we all sit around and laugh and talk. And, you know, it's a really good environment. Everyone should get in and make games. Screw the other jobs. Just everyone should make games.
So maybe there's someone who's listening who's maybe on the fence about getting into games development. Maybe they are interested in it but are just a little bit hesitant to make the leap. What would you tell that person?
Well, I mean, get on the internet and see the courses in your area. There's lots in Brisbane that you can come and see. There's open days all the time where you get to come in and get hands-on. SA recently had theirs, so there won't be another one for a little bit. But you know, feel free. You know, most of us are, you know, on social media. There's a few indie developers that teach as well, like myself. So there's a presence there. You can get in contact with a lot of people and sort of start asking questions beforehand. But, you know, if you don't have that access, just apply, jump in. You know, there's usually, you know, a little risk in giving it a go.
You can even go for that first 4 weeks before the census date.
There you go. But yeah, jump in, give it a go. You know, it's work, but it's fun. Yeah, it beats a lot of other jobs. I couldn't imagine being an accountant, right? So,
yeah. So just talking real talk for a second, Anthony, as an industry veteran, well, you've been doing it for a while anyway. How has the career been for you? Like, has it been fulfilling, everything you wanted to be when you started?
It's a slog.
That is a loaded question. Right, yeah. Holy cow.
Are you a multi-billionaire yet?
not yet. Right? It's hard. It's a hard life. You know, lots of noodles. Yeah. So if you're used to university lifestyle with noodles, that doesn't stop when you graduate. But I did something stupid. I went and started my own company. You know, I really didn't have any experience. So, you know,
That is what you encourage your students to do once they graduate as well.
Yeah, you know, hopefully I can bring that experience and try and push them in the right direction. We sort of just jumped out. The industry crashed in Brisbane and we graduated and went, oh, okay, there's no work. So, yeah, it's been a slog, you know, good times, really bad times as well. You know, it can be pretty dramatic. Lots and lots of money thrown against the wall, and you know, it's where I think game developers are the struggling artists of the 21st century.
You know, Ray, you should not have asked this question.
But I'm going to cry.
But at least you're not an accountant.
At least I'm not an accountant. Yeah. Although I imagine accountants are successfully paying their rent.
That's
and,
true.
You know,
doing something I'm passionate about.
No, but yeah, I do something I love every single day, every single day, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. But you know,
I've never heard a man so passionate about noodles.
I understand that pizza boxes are an excellent source of discarded cheese.
Jeez, I can't afford pizza boxes.
Guys, thank you very much for joining us in the program. Joel Mahonish. My apologies, Joel. And Anthony Wood of SAE. It's been great talking to you. Power Glove with Rex Colt. And before that, the ending theme from Sonic 3. You're listening to Zed Games. I'm Razor, joined by Tom and Lee. Lee, you've been playing a game called Abzu.
I have, yes.
Is it absolutely fabulous?
It's something like that. If you'd have landed that would have been amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, they can't all be winners.
That's true. Yes, I have been
Someone's got to get the bronze.
I have been playing Abzu, which is a game by... it's the debut game by Studio Giant Squid, which was founded by the art director for Flower and Journey, which are both on the PS3, kind of arty, interesting games. Journey, in particularly critically acclaimed as a game about being a strange kite person crossing a desert on very nice-looking sand. Abzu is about being a strange cat-like person swimming through a reef that has very nice sand at the very bottom of it. So there's definitely some shared influence here, some similar mechanics, possibly not hitting those same highs that Journey did, but I really enjoyed it. I'm starting to find that the weird tiny subgenre of games where you're at the bottom of the ocean and that's nice, that's working out for me. That's my new thing now.
What are the other games in that subgenre?
So there's Subnautica,
right?
Which is a survival game about being at the bottom of the ocean, and it's nice, and you can reach out and grab a fish and just eat him.
Are we counting Bioshock in this?
No, that's that's not a game where you're at the bottom of the ocean and it's nice.
Right.
That's a game where you're at the bottom of the ocean and it's not nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Entirely different genre.
Yes. Okay. Completely different. That's a much more popular genre.
Right.
Yeah.
So does Abzu follow Journey's template where you are on a quest to travel somewhere?
Yes. You are a cat-like entity who can swim around in a reef, and you tend to have a vague idea of where you need to go.
Do you have gills?
You don't have gills. No, you've got an aquatic suit with like flippers. You're like, you're a humanoid, but your diving helmet, which your eyes are visible through, has like weird little cat ears built into it. So it kind of looks more like you're a cat-themed Power Ranger that goes swimming, because your scuba suit has these big long fins on the feet and also on the hands.
Okay. That's what I don't get about this. Every time I used to wash my cat,
yeah,
like, cats hate water.
Yeah, but that's because they're not in a scuba suit.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So, and again, you're bipedal. You're not.
Okay.
It's really just the ears, which I am doing a gesture for listeners. And you're missing it. But yeah. So it's much like Journey. The narrative is implied rather than actually overtly explained to you. You start off in one part of the map and there's nowhere else to go except the other part. You make your way there through, like, swimming, obviously. And stuff wordlessly happens, and everything is pretty and nice around you. It's narratively, fairly vague, and mechanically a little bit shallow. There's almost something there, but not quite. And I apologize, but it's I really enjoyed it. I came to really love Abzu. Initially, I thought that. I was disappointed with the swimming controls. They felt clumsy to me to begin with. I felt like I was fighting both the direction that the swimmer wanted to go in and then also the camera at the same time. But I eventually made my peace with them and then came to really derive a great deal of pleasure from just swimming about. So that's really interesting, that much of the game seems to be just based on the fact that just playing it is nice, you know. Like, once you get a handle on swimming about, it feels good just to move, and you can, you know, engage in little flourishes, do flips and speed up. And I realized right towards the end of the game that you can actually speed up like a dolphin, like launch yourself through the surface of the water, up into the air, do a flip, and then come straight back down again like a bullet. And that's the best thing ever, because you have so much control over every part of that. So it's a very pleasurable game to play, and then to watch and to listen to as well, because it has, just like Journey, a really, really nice ambient soundtrack by Austin Wintry, which like takes off during these extended kind of directed sequences.
You just mentioned Journey again. In that game, you go on a journey. In Abzu, do you go on an Abzu?
Abzu is it's taken from two, I believe they're Mesopotamian word portions that form together to create the word primordial sea,
right,
which is what you are in. You are in a massive ocean that seems to have some dinosaurs in it at some point.
Yes. It doesn't sound very historically correct.
No, it's not. Nor
with,
are there
catmen,
and spaceships and all kinds of things. Uh-huh. Yeah, like there are little robotoids that help you out at certain points.
So the bottom of the ocean is home to some of the craziest animals in the world.
Well, fish.
Fish.
Yes.
Fish, marine life. What animals do you encounter in Abzu?
This is one of the great things about the game, is that there's the schools of fish are modeled, their behaviors are being modeled, and there's a massive variety of them. You will find yourself in these kind of large linking spaces in between the more pseudo-puzzly elements of the game, where you just can like sit on a statue and meditate and hang out, and then your camera kind of shifts from sea creature to sea creature as you watch them swirling about in this huge space. And it's really nice. So there's all kinds of things from like clownfish and eels and remoras and what else? Those dudes with the glowing dangly things on their head. Those guys.
Anglerfish.
There are giant squid. There are tiny squid, ammonites. All kinds of like crazy underwater dudes are all there, and their behavior is modeled in a reasonably realistic way.
Are any of the animals hostile towards you?
One of them is, sort of. There is a mean shark that you pursue for reasons that I can't go into through much of the game. But most of the time, the sea creatures around you are pretty chill. And that is probably how I would explain and describe every component of this game, that it is pretty chill.
It sounds like a very meditative, relaxed experience. Is it? Does it differ from most traditional games? I mean, are there a lot of objectives or puzzles that you have to work through?
Generally, there'll be something obvious blocking you from proceeding to the next area. And the solving of that is a matter of a very basic level of dexterity or you know, searching around for things. So there's only really ever one or two objectives that you have to follow, and the rest of it is just transit between these spaces. So it's largely meditative with these moments of puzzliness. And I think that some people going into it expecting there to be a more objective-based, more mechanically-based game might be disappointed. But I was initially, to be fair. I went in, you know, and I saw the trailer that showed at E3, and it was just this like gorgeous, colorful, just cacophony of sound and fish and fury. And I was expecting there to be more to do, and I was a little bit disappointed that it was so obvious and directed at times. But then when I returned to it later, I was exhausted and anxious, and I needed something to serve as a balm, and this game was perfect. There was, at one point, I emerged from a reef into a large open space of just like what seemed like endless, bottomless ocean below me, and encountered a whole family of whales, massive whales that dwarfed the player character. And this is a bit where part of the control is taken away from you as you swim alongside these giant whales. And I became so at peace through the combination of this art and the music and everything that I entered a trance-like state. And from there, I fell asleep. I drifted off on my couch and suddenly started awake. And I had finished the sequence. I had I'd sleptwalked or
right. Through it's the whole a game you can literally play in your sleep.
Definitely parts of it, yes. Yeah. So that was actually really nice. I think it's an excellent game to unwind to, and Journey was very similar in that same sense.
So that could be either an endorsement for the game, or if you're not into that sort of thing, I mean, a game that puts you to sleep, that's not for everyone.
No, that's true. Look, if, you know, you are hoping that you've got a harpoon and you've got a, like, vicious shark enemy whose name is Dr. Mangletooth, who's stolen your girlfriend, that's not in this game. That's a game that I've just right now decided that I'm going to develop because it sounds incredible.
Yeah.
I want in on that game.
I'm bringing down Dr. Mangletooth.
You will find no such experience here. Although there is a narrative, it is pretty satisfying to see it through to completion. But Abzu is absolutely a game that you really want to come to and play it on its own terms, which is that it's going to just be a delightful sequence of visual splendor and wonderful music and an excellent, playful set of controls. So, yeah, Abzu, go to the bottom of the ocean and enjoy yourself. Why not?
Excellent. Thanks, Lee. And availability of the game, what did you play it on?
I played it on the PlayStation 4, where it's on there at indie game prices, I believe, $20-ish dollars. You can also get it on Steam on the PC.
Unfortunately, we don't have any music to play from the game, but I'll have to track some down because it's by Austin Wintory, who's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, Austin Wintory is a fantastic composer who has worked on a great many games, but Journey being one of them. Journey, he won awards for that, right?
Oh, he was nominated for a Grammy. Don't think he took out the prize, though.
Oh, dang.
And in fact, we offered to let him come on the show, but...
Yeah, he called us jerks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, actually, we've interviewed Austin Wintory on this show, Tom.
Have we?
Yeah.
Well,
he's been on the show.
That's what I'm saying. That was his award. Duh.
Yeah.
Hello.
That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Zed Games. Thank you very much for your company. It's been a pleasure bringing the show to you. Catch you guys next week.